Removing this covering, one finds the tiny green leaves curled about a small bunch of green buds so small that they can scarcely be seen with the naked eye. The possibilities of this tiny bunch of green are not apparent as yet. It is the soul of the plant, however, and in it the thoughtful mind may find an illustration of the soup's development, growth and unfoldment. The spark of immortality which emanates from God has the faculties within it in miniature form. The life force within, which cannot perish, will express itself through the rounding out of the beautiful faculties which God has planted in embryonic form in the heart of every soul cell. The soul, be it ever so small, is a miniature of perfection complete in itself, according to divine law. Its law is growth in fullness and beauty. The physical expression of the soul may not equal in strength and beauty the mighty force which gave it life and caused it to grow and unfold, for one is the cause and the other effect. The cause should be greater than the effect. The soul, as it grows and unfolds within the physical body, finds a time when it demands something higher and better than the outward covering which limits its growth, and so, like the soul of the worm, the gorgeous butterfly, it bursts its shackles and soars onward toward immortality, immortality, that glorious inheritance that the Creator has left for his children to win. People have said that one particular region in the physical body must be the seat of the soul. We who know say that the soul generates itself through every part of the physical body. Wherever there is sensation, there is soul. Every nerve cell of the physical body has an electric filament running through it that is of soul force. When life ceases to exist in a particular part, it does not follow that the life force is dead. On account of the failure of the fiendical, the life force cannot express itself to the physical, even though it exists the same as before. It is because the physical understanding is so dense that it cannot comprehend the spiritual, the tip ends of the fingers of brain and soul force. But this force is dormant unless exercised and developed. One can do wonderful things through the exercise of these functions if he will. He can learn to distinguish colors in the dark and handle an article and give its complete history. Many blind people have developed this faculty and used it to supply the deficient power of physical sight. People have wondered why the right hand possesses so much more power than the left. The answer is very simple. It is because the left H not used as much as the right. Children should be taught to use both hands. The result will be equal strength on both sides. If people used only one leg in walking, the corresponding limb would be deficient in strength. It is a well-known fact that the left half of the brain controls the right side and vice versa. One side of the brain is positive, the other negative, and these two forces must be balanced before power will result. Therefore, if the left side of the brain is positive, the right side is negative. The two forces united give that mighty strength expressed through the physical. To be sure, the soul has its centers of force in the physical body, and the supplely cut off from many of these centers results in death to the physical. The electrical vibrations of the soul which radiate through the different parts of the physical are, after death, united in one grand force in the spiritual body. A vibration is an electric or magnetic current which, when sent to any particular point, produces an expression or impression. One may see a vibration by looking at an electric arc light at night. Of course, the vibrations of the spiritual force are of a higher order than those of an electric light, but one may find an illustration in them if he will study them. The vibrations of the spiritual are electrical, while those of the physical are magnetic. Electrical force is immortal, magnetic force is perishable and must be continually renewed. These two forces vary in form and color. One is irregular in form and of a deep purple, radiating a golden tinge. The other is expressed in a straight line and is rose pink in color. A person who possesses an intense vitality will radiate the magnetic vibrations. One who is very spiritual and soulful in his nature will send out the electrical vibrations. Magna is health, electro is spirit. One who is balanced in these two forces is a power in himself. The gentle Jesus was perfectly balanced in magnetic and electrical strength, and so his life was a power within itself. The electric vibrations of the spiritual are connected at the brain, the heart and the solar plexus. This is the reason why these different points are vital centers, and if the supply is cut off, death ensues to the body. These truths of which I have spoken pertain to the immortality of the soul. While it is an inmate of the physical, its higher form of expression shows it to be independent entirely of the physical, growing, developing and unfolding in the higher life, which has no limitations, and where it may come into the complete fullness of the power for which it has been created. This is the fulfilling of the law that the soul is a part of that one great whole whose body nature is on God the whole. Second part. Communications on the heavenly life. Jerusalem. Jerusalem. Thy streets of pearl and gold, are trod by the blessed feet of them, we knew and loved of old. Their voices full of calm delight, steal through the radiant air, Jerusalem. Jerusalem. Our hearts are with them there. Anonymous. Chapter I. Wonders of the Celestial World. Content in this chapter. Spirit world transcendent, no space limits, millions of spirits in small space, reality of life, wondrous compass of spiritual seeing, religion of love and understanding, education of children, the Christ, opportunity for all, temple of God, wonderful creations, symbol language, creative processes, strange and wonderful events transpire daily in that region beyond the earth's atmosphere known as the spirit world. Few there are who can form any conception of that life who have not looked upon its transcendent grandeur and spiritual beauty. We may say that the higher world does not occupy space, for in the spiritual sense there is no limit to space, there is no top, no bottom, no height or depth. That which appears to the physical sight to be a boundary line between the earth and the sky is nothing more nor less than an effect. The reality of life and condition is found in the eternal world. People upon the physical plane, spiritual knowledge is the key to life's problems. M. are walking about half of the time in a dream or dazed condition. They do not experience the reality of life that is to be found in the higher world. In the eternal world there is plenty of room for millions and millions of souls who are yet to come. And yet all places there are built up and are open to the visitation of the angelic host. It is difficult for the material mind to realize how 1 million spirits can occupy a very small space and yet be of average height and form. It is true, nevertheless, and is one of those realities that must be seen to be understood. The mind and eye of the spirit possess qualifications that are above those of the physical. The spiritual eye can see all parts of the physical body, internally and externally. It is impossible for the physical eye to see the back of the head unless it is reflected in a mirror, but the spiritual eye can see the back of the head and all that is going on in the distance from the rear. I only mention this as a curious but nevertheless true fact. Religion in the eternal world is of the highest standard. There is but one religion, and that is a beautiful one. It accepts all souls and is the religion of God. It teaches of progression for all men and universal opportunity for those who take on the garment of immortality. Love is the law upon which the religion of heaven is based. The love of God for his children, even though they err, for all may be purified through divine love. Young children of the higher world are taught at a very tender age to become lecturers and speakers, and there are chapels and lecture halls in that world where the speakers and members of the choir are all young children. The remarks they make and the thoughts given out would do credit to many a man of intellect. This is one of the beautiful teachings of the higher life, for in that world where people desire progression and intellectual growth, speakers are essential, and the little child who is taught to give voice to his thoughts will in later years be able to touch the souls of the multitude with his inspired thought and his wonderful teachings. The gentle Christ who walks about among the people produces in the minds of the young children a desire to follow in his footsteps, for all who are brought in contact with that lovable personality are filled with a strange and wonderful peace, which is the peace that cannot be found in the physical. The religion of heaven is based upon understanding, not faith, and may be analyzed and reasoned out to the complete satisfaction of all who enter that life. The light which emanates from the divine finds its way into all souls and they can but say it is well, Before I saw through a glass darkly, but now all truths have been revealed unto me, and I rejoice in the fact that all laws are carried out through the divine plan. New ideas, new thoughts are being continually worked out in the higher world, but there is a great deal for which the people of the earth are not ready. Certain inventions that are about to be given to the world have been known in the spirit life for 25 years, and many of the ideas that I have given out through my writing will be more favorably received a year from now than they are at the present time. The mind of man is going through the crucible to make it ready for the grand and beautiful touch of the divine hand. There is a building in the celestial world called the Temple of God. This building extends for several miles and is being continually filled with the creations of God. This building is consecrated to God. Esto angel's work may enter here, only that which pertains to God. What a marvelous creation is this temple with God's workmanship displayed upon every hand. Upon the walls of this temple may be seen moving pictures that seem endowed with life scenes. Many of them are scenes that are transpiring in God's kingdom of the higher sphere. These marvelous pictures must be seen to be comprehended, for they are beyond power of description. This temple is always flooded with a light in which is blended 15 different colors that vibrate in different forms. At times these lights seem to arrange themselves in their form of beautiful flowers, then again they appear to be straight or horizontal lines with all colors shaded in the most artistic arrangement. Then again these lights will roll like billowy clouds in the most intense brilliancy of coloring and the softest, most delicate tints imaginable. This is divine light, and the soul that draws near to such light appears suddenly glorified. He surely is in touch with the divine who can draw near to this wonderful form of light. At times the place will seem to be filled with millions and millions of stars of many colors, the different forms of light being symbols of some force that is about to be carried out upon the earth. The symbol of stars meaning that new discoveries and wonderful inventions are about to occur on the earth. Golden lights and stars refer to the fact that indications pertaining to discoveries and powers of gold are working their way upon the earth. Certain colors, waves and forms show revelations of a spiritual nature of the rocks, the sea or the air. The individual well-versed in spiritual law can enter the temple of God and be able to tell the meaning of the varied tints, stripes, spheres, zigzag or horizontal lines, or different colored stars. There are a few people upon the earth who have the gift of seeing with their own eyes the things that I have described that take place in the temple of God. How beautiful it is to gaze at a small purple spot and see it suddenly open out, showing a basket of beautiful flowers or a fountain throwing up sprays of rainbow-tinted water, or again to see the whole interior of the room festooned with bouquets of the most beautiful flowers and shining over all the strange and beautiful light that I have described upon a previous page. How wonderful and beautiful it all is, the glorious and beautiful temple wherein are displayed the wonderful creations of the divine. My soul is filled with delight as I reflect upon the wonders of thy creation. I can only say in the name of the divine, it is well. Chapter 2. Books and their writers. The Light of Eternity, author, T. H. Burgoyne. Content in this chapter. The higher spiritual laws. How writing is made in heaven. Spiritual boos. What made of and how. Comments upon the light of eternity. Power of desire, attainment through intense spirituality, solitude of nature, suited to unfoldment, Jesus' habit. Those who were writers in earth life are at work in the eternal world upon a higher line of thought than they wrote while on earth. T. H. Burgoyne, who gave to the world his work entitled The Light of Egypt, has produced upon the other side a strangely fascinating work written under the title of The Light of Eternity. This work corrects many of the errors of his former work and goes to show that things are not what they seem when viewed through the light of the material mind. In this work the higher spiritual laws are set forth and a great deal is shown that may be accomplished by the power of thought in its higher development. The books and literature of heaven are largely produced by the expression of thought upon the open page. One has only to think and immediately the words appear in indelible lettering. A person may understand by this that a very lofty development of the thought power must be acquired to produce such an expression as I have mentioned. In the production of spiritual books, thought has passed through the development stage to one of spiritual unfoldment. The expressions are imprinted upon large sheets of different tints and colors. These sheets are made from the spiritual flowers pressed out. Although they contain the expressed thoughts, they may be said to be alive, for you cannot destroy the eternal life principle in a spiritual flower, no matter into what form you fold or press it. The light of eternity serves as a book of instruction for those who would progress in the higher philosophy of spiritual truth, and for those in different stages of development. There are many thoughts produced upon its pages that cannot be understood by those who have not attained a very high stage of unfoldment. Among some things written in the book is this: the immutable laws of God radiate through all forms of nature, both spiritual and material. And it would be an utter impossibility for any man to withdraw himself from God, for God is everywhere. The divine spark has found expression within every immortal soul. When I say every immortal soul, I mean to infer that every created soul is immortal and is connected with the universal life principle of God. In the higher unfoldment of spiritual law, expression has found a lofty development. One has only to express to himself the desire to be in a certain place, and behold, he is there. He has but to wish to see a particular individual and how he is occupied, and lo! He has brought his friend into his very presence, and the duties with which he is occupied at the time are also shown. Such manifestations can be produced only through intense spirituality and are not to be acquired simply through the desire. The mind of the spirit must be subjected to long and intense thought before the powers mentioned may be attained in any degree. If it were possible for a person to go into the haunts of nature and remain in one spot for 10 or 12 hours, all the while holding in his mind one desire, and not permitting his mind to wander from his subject, he would find himself possessed of a power he never dreamed of before, and the acquirement of one step would prepare him for the next higher one. Suppose, for instance, he desires the power to leave his body and visit the spirit world, and then come back and relate what he has seen. He cannot accomplish this by concentrating his mind for a few moments and then have something occur which turns the thought in an entirely different direction. During the summer months, if one would acquire such powers as have been mentioned, it would be well to seek some quiet woodland spot where one may commune with God and his own soul, as he cannot do amid the hurry and bustle of city life. Jesus during his earthly career felt often the need of such solace, and when he became weary of the people he would seek some quiet spot, knowing full well that was just what he needed in order to perform his necessary spiritual work. He frequently desired to pray alone and would ask his disciples to leave him, for he was in a state of mind that called for the deep and intense solitude of nature. Chapter 3. Books and Theoetes, Continued. Content in this chapter. Astral experience, not unbalanced mentality, losing one's self, not insanity, peace and harmony of nature conducive to spirituality. California, in the advanced stages, desire is power, selfishness the barrier, the higher vibrations, pure and unselfish. Prentice Mulford, The Higher Self in Unfoldment, Nathaniel Hawthorne, Hilda. The idea seems to be in the minds of people that to be able to leave the physical body is an indication of unbalanced mentality. For this reason many are afraid to subject themselves to any form that will show the higher expression of spiritual law. Because an intelligence possesses the power to lose himself in a physical sense is no indication of insanity, and it is only ignorance that will hold to such an idea. There is a right as well as a wrong idea about these things. The sweet peace and harmony of nature are always conducive to intense spirituality. This is one reason why California furnishes an excellent field for the development of mediumship and its higher laws, because then it seems that one is close to the very soul of nature. There are flowers, birds and soft, balmy air. The soul rejoices and manifests itself as it cannot do in the busy whirl of city life. In the last few passages written, it was shown how one could bring himself into subjection while upon the physical plane, and now to return to the subject of books and writers in the celestial sphere. The writing of T.H. Burgoyne is particularly applicable to those who have passed beyond the primary stages of soul consciousness and entered into the very soul of things. This is accomplished by different stages of reflection, concentration, and spiritual communion with the life principle which radiates the universe. The spiritual mind upon the higher plane desires unfoldment, and with desire comes the power. The individual upon the earth plane is not willing to subject himself to those laws by which he may find the power while yet in the physical. Selfishness is the barrier that holds man back in the physical and prevents him from soaring to the very heights of divine beauty and power. Even if an individual is of himself unselfish, there are so many selfish vibrations floating about that it is hard for one to keep them off. The vibrations of the higher world are of a pure, unselfish nature, therefore they cannot strike, like keen-pointed arrows, into the soul. Only those vibrations which elevate the nature and enable it to grow are received. Therefore there is nothing to hinder spiritual unfoldment in its higher sense. Prentice Mulford has given a valuable work to the celestial world. Its title is The Higher Self in a State of Unfoldment. The author of this work, while in the physical, subjected himself to the dictates of higher law. He could vacate his body and return and also remember what he had seen. When the time came for him to leave the physical, by his wonderful power of mind he simply separated himself from his body while upon one of his long trips. Finding his lifeless body in the boat, the conclusion was that he had passed away from heart failure. It was only that he understood the higher law, that was all. His passage from the body was a repetition of an act he had often performed, and was as painless as that of a babe lying down to sleep. Nathaniel Hawthorne has given to the celestial world a work more weird and fascinating than anything he ever wrote while in the physical. Its title is Hilda, A Romance of the Celestial Star. It is the tale of a soul born under most peculiar circumstances and of the growth and unfoldment of the spiritual nature of Hilda. How she was betrothed spiritually, while yet unborn, to Etwin. I want to explain to you that there is no marrying nor giving of marriage in heaven, but all people have a soulmate, and the love that exists between these two is purely spiritual. There is soul, and how as she grows and develops in the physical world, her spiritual vision remains open, and daily she sees and talks with her spiritual affinity, who is an inhabitant of the celestial world. She does not reveal the peculiar romance of her life to the physical friends, who find in her a character strangely fascinating but not understood. I cannot explain further this intensely interesting book. One who reads it, however, will find nothing but an expression of higher spiritual law, no physical law in it. Few people find their soulmates on earth. Some do, and where they do, there is only the most perfect harmony existing between the two. Chapter 4. Music. Content in this chapter. God's voice materialized, soul power, inner harmonies, retirement, dwelling in the subliminal, ecstasy of the great masters, power to awaken dormant faculties, songs of nature, exquisite harmonies, power to work reform, food for the soul, different effects, higher music for the unfolded soul. Music is one of the grandest faculties of the immortal soul. We may say that music is God's voice materialized and made clear to the physical senses. Grand music will lift one to the loftiest heights. The grand masters of music understood well how to touch the divine keys of their soul and thereby produce the exquisite harmonies that will live throughout all time. All music should possess soul quality, that is, it should not only cause the listener to think of its exquisite tone harmony, but it should touch the deeper chords of the soul and make him feel the divine touch within that is deeper than all speech, all thought and all expression. All masters of music must retire as it were to the very sanctuary of the soul and produce the inner harmonies to themselves before they can produce them upon material instruments to delight and inspire the people. Music which is produced from the very depths of the soul will have the effect of bringing the listener close to the divine force within him, and for the time being cause him to forget that there are clouds and trials to be endured. To produce an immortal symphony, one whose expression will touch the very chords of the soul and cause them to vibrate, one must retire from the things of the world and, for the time being, dwell within the subliminal consciousness which is the mind of the soul. The melodies produced will vibrate upon the finer ear of the spirit and find expression through the physical body in the most inspiring symphonies. In what a rapt state of being must have been Mozart, Beethoven, Wagner, Liszt, Bach, Mendelssohn and other master composers when they were creating the masterpieces of their souls. Beautiful music will awaken until they spring into life faculties that have been apparently dormant in the minds of those who have become hardened in the sins of the world. Many a hardened criminal has wept bitter tears upon hearing some simple melody that brought back memories of a time when he was pure and unsullied from contact with the world. It is a fact that if you can reach the soul of an individual through his dense material covering, you can surely influence him for good. And beautiful music is a most potent force in this direction. It is well for the development of the soul to draw close to nature and attune the ear to her exquisite melodies. The song of the brook, as it dances and plays over the rock, is a most exquisite melody. There is perfect harmony, there is no discord to jar upon the fine, well-trained ear of feeling. The voice of the wind as it sings softly through the trees is a divine symphony from God. And the master soul who can reproduce it upon the keys of an instrument has earned the right to be called master of the keys. As a great writer has said, if any man is in doubt as to his identity, let him go into the woods and study nature. She will prove to him whether he is a child of God or not. To the ear of harmony there is a charm to be found in music that is quite unlike that derived from any of the higher arts. And the man who has music in his soul is capable of being molded in a high degree to that which is in every way desirable. If music was a part of the daily regulations of reformatories, homes for inebriates and insane asylums, it would do a great deal toward subduing the inmates and cause them to become more tractable and easy to manage. It should be the duty of every individual to avail himself of every opportunity within his reach to listen to beautiful, grand and soul-inspiring music. It is an educator, not alone of the mental faculties, but it furnishes food also for the spiritual in man's nature and causes him to see new beauties in objects hitherto passed by unnoticed. We may say that the music of the different composers touches different chords in the soul. The music of Wagner touches the chord of fancy and causes the hearer to drift away upon the wings of occasion as light and free as a bird or some merry elf who is simply happy. The music of Beethoven strikes a deeper chord and brings a feeling of grandeur that is quite unlike that produced by any other composer. The music of the different composers touches the chords of sympathy, joy, fancy, grandeur, glory, sadness and love. And the soul that would develop its inner faculties must try to understand the effect of different styles of music upon his nature. If he is by nature light-hearted and fanciful, he must develop the other faculties of his nature and he should therefore cultivate a taste for deep and soulful melodies, that will show him that his soul has mighty depths as well as lofty heights. The music of the heavenly spheres is upon a much grander and more beautiful scale than that afforded the soul in its material environment. It is music for the unfolded soul. Beethoven's Divine Symphony, Handel's Eternal Capsody and Wagner's Music of the Spheres and Plan of Creation, and Handel's Celestial Chorus, are all compositions of a very high order and may well be classified as masterpieces of divine melody. And the souls of those privileged to participate in such grand performances as those which take place in the heavenly spheres are indeed in tune with the infinite of life in the divine. Chapter V. Inspiration. Content in this chapter. Attunement to angelic vibrations, soulful eloquence, soul, like a harp, divine gift, the gifted artist, angelic guidance and communion, in tune with the infinite, illumination within, soul cultivation, necessary, receptivity to angelic influence, advanced ideas, Edison, astral discovery, suggestion, science, Edward Bellamy. There are times when the souls of philosophers and deep thinkers are attuned to the vibrations of inspiring angels who surround them, and at such times the eloquence is soulful and creates an impression upon the hearers as nothing else can.